I do live probably about 20 minutes, half hour south of Canton. My wife works up that area. So we've lived there since the early 90s, and we moved to the area because we thought we actually had a church, and after about a year or so, we realized that really didn't work out. And so from the mid-90s until about the year 1999, almost 2000, I had actually, at the urging of my pastor, former pastor, we had to leave because of economic considerations like this other family. He urged me to go ahead and do a Bible study, and we had a Bible study in that area for about 5 to 6 years. And then that kind of just died out. And we've been worshiping in our home ever since. So anyway, that's what we've done or whatever, and it's been a pleasure getting to, you know, correspond with Scott. And actually, it seems like I have a lot of very good relationships, you know, through email. I just wish that I could meet a few of these people and things. So, but anyway, let's turn to 1 Corinthians 10. Just again, I had that as an introduction, and I had asked that would be read. In just thinking of the church in Corinth, just momentarily, and then we'll be going into the Old Testament, but there are many here today, or not here, but I mean, there are many in our country today that we need to get back to the church of Corinth. We need to be more like what they were, because it was such a vibrant church, and so they supposedly had all these gifts and everything else. But I think that it could easily be said that of all the churches in the New Testament, that the church in Corinth was a church with the most spiritual problems. In the pages of this book, Paul addresses a laundry list of issues that were affecting the church. They had a party spirit. They were some of Cephas, some of Paul, some of Apollos. They were dividing among themselves. There were public immorality. Somebody had actually taken his mother as like a wife. There were issues regarding marriage, regarding food and idols, and the list could go on. And in chapter 9, we find here, if we were to take the time, Paul here is defending his apostleship. People had been questioning him, saying that he was weak and that he was vacillating and that he didn't really care about us. And they were criticizing him, saying that he was not really worthy to be an apostle. Then we have in chapter 10, we go on and we're talking again, verses 14 and following, more about idolatry and about eating things sacrificed to idols. But yet tucked away in the midst of this, we have the passage that we had read just momentarily. Let's read it again. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses, into the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food. All ate and drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. So here we find in a statement from Paul regarding one of the benefits of the Old Testament, and we have it tucked away in between this defense of his ministry and this food sacrifice to idols. We have Paul speaking about the proper use of the Old Testament. If you look at verse 6, now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And then further in verse 11, Paul makes a similar statement. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the end of the ages have come. And again, these things are lessons that from the Old Testament. And from the Old Testament, and it's not the only use we have, but one of the reasons that the Holy Spirit had these things inscribed for us, written down, was for us as examples. And clearly, in this situation, they are negative examples, how we ought not to live. Well, what I'm saying is that, you know, these things are our examples, and that we should be able to read with profit the Old Testament from and look at these type of things and how we can live our lives. And thus, for the remainder of our time, I would like to go ahead and turn to a passage in the Old Testament to examine one such incident in the lives of some of the Israelites, an incident after this study is highly instructive regarding the days in which we live. And that, if you would go ahead and turn to the book of Judges. And almost echoing Paul's words, the passage that we will study this evening speaks as clearly to us as it did to those to whom it was written 3,000 years ago. Let's turn to Judges chapter 2 to begin with. And as you're going there, I'll just tell you a little bit about Judges. The book of Judges is one of the many books of the Old Testament. It's one of the earlier books of the Old Testament. Judges records for us the history of the Israelites immediately following then the days of Moses and Joshua. Israel had wandered in the desert for 40 years. And during that time, Moses and Aaron were the spiritual leaders of the people. After the death of Moses, Joshua, Moses' servant, became the leader of the people. And then Aaron's son Eleazar was the priest at that time. And also they were the spiritual leaders of the people. And through that time, the land was conquered. They conquered the land. And also, he and Eleazar actually divvied up, by direction by God, by lot, the land unto the people. And in chapter 2, beginning in verse 6, "And when Joshua had dismissed the people, the children of Israel each went to his own inheritance to possess the land. So the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died when he was 110 years old. And they buried him within the border of his inheritance at Timnath-Heres, in the mountains of Ephraim, on the north side of Mount Gaash. When all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord, nor the work which he had done for Israel. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. And they followed other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were all around them, and they bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. They forsook the Lord and served Baal and the Asherahs. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. So he delivered them into the hand of the plunderers who despoiled them. He sold them into the hand of their enemies all around, so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. Wherever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for calamity, as the Lord had said, and as the Lord had sworn to them, they were greatly distressed. Nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges who delivered them out of the hand of those who plundered them, yet they would not listen to their judges, but they played the harlot with other gods and bowed down to them. They turned quickly from the way in which their fathers walked in obeying the commandment of the Lord. They did not do so." The remainder then of the book of Judges is the inspired record then of the Lord's dealing with those that knew not the Lord. And if we would go through and we find here, just in flipping through the books, just turn over another page. And if I have actually the New King James here, and we have, mine has little headings, and it gives just who these judges were. Verse 7 of chapter 3, Othniel. Verse 12, Ehud. Verse 31 of chapter 3, Shagmar. And we could go on, and the Lord raised up judges each and every time that the people were subdued by their enemies, and then they did cry out to the Lord. And we have time after time after time that these people were supposedly going to be obedient to God, and then, you know, things are nice and going okay, and then they just forsook God again. And this happened over and over again. And this is the vast majority of what we find in the book of Judges. But if you would turn back to chapter 17, we actually have in the book of Judges two other incidences recorded that are not concerning the judges themselves. But I think that they were recorded to give us an idea of the spiritual state of the people as a whole. There were two separate incidences here. We have one in chapter 17 and 18 concerning Micah and then the tribe of Dan. Chapters 19, 20, and 21 concerning the concubine of a Levite. So what we have here is we have these two incidences, and both of these incidences concern Levites, those that were supposed to be the spiritual leaders within the children of Israel. And as we're going to be looking at one of these, but if you would read these last five chapters of the book of Judges in your leisure, you will find that they are some of the most heinous sins indeed. And it is actually, I would like to look at one of these incidences in its entirety. And what I would like to do, and it's a little bit of scripture to go through, but I think that it is very instructive for us, and there are many parallels that we can draw out for today, because many of these same attitudes that we find, and we're going to be looking at chapter 17 and 18, many of the same attitudes that we find here in these pages, 3,000 years ago, you can go to the store and see the same type of thing. You can see these with your neighbor. You can see these in our society and on the news. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to go ahead and actually read down through chapter 17 and 18, and then we'll go back through it and I'll make a few comments, and then we'll close with a few observations. Chapter 17. Now there was a man of the mountains of Ephraim whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother, "The 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from you, on which you put a curse, even saying it in my ears, here is the silver with me, I took it." And his mother said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my son." So when he returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, "I have wholly dedicated the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son to make a carved image and a molded image. Now therefore I will return it to you." Thus he returned the silver to his mother. Then his mother took 200 shekels of silver, gave them to the silversmith, and he made it into a carved image and a molded image. And they were in the house of Micah. And Micah had a shrine and made an ephod and a house and household idols. And he consecrated one of his sons who became his priest. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Now there was a young man from Bethlehem in Judah, of the family of Judah. He was a Levite and was staying there. The man departed from the city of Bethlehem in Judah to stay wherever he could find a place. Then he came to the mountains of Ephraim, to the house of Micah as he journeyed. And Micah said to him, "Where do you come from?" So he said to him, "I am a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I am on my way to find a place to stay." Micah said to him, "Dwell with me, and I will be a father and priest to me, and I will give you 10 shekels of silver per year, a suit of clothes, and your sustenance." So the Levite went in. The Levite was content to dwell with the man, and the young man became like one of his sons to him. So Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest, and lived in the house of Micah. Then Micah said, "Now I know that the Lord will be good to me, since I have a Levite as priest." In those days there was no king in Israel, and in those days the tribe of the Danites was seeking an inheritance for itself to dwell in. For until that day, their inheritance among the tribes of Israel had not fallen to them. So the children of Dan sent 5 men of their family from the territory, men of valor from Zorah and Eshtaol, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said to them, "Go search the land." So they went to the mountains of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and lodged there. Now they were at the house of Micah. They recognized the voice of the young Levite. They turned aside and said to him, "Who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? What do you have here?" And he said to them, "Thus and so Micah did for me. He hired me, and I have become his priest." So they said to him, "Please inquire of God, that we may know whether the journey on which we go will be prosperous." And the priest said to them, "Go in peace. The presence of the Lord be with you on your way." So the 5 men departed and went to Laish. They saw a people who were there, how they dwelt safely, in a manner of the Sidonians, quiet and secure. There was no rulers in the land who put them to shame for anything, and they were far from the Sidonians, and they had no ties with anyone. Then the spies came back to their brethren at Zorah and Eshtaol, and their brethren said to them, "What is your report?" So they said, "Arise, let us go up against them, for we have seen the land, and indeed it is very good. Would you do nothing? Do not hesitate and go and enter and to possess a land. And when you go, you will come to a secure people and a large land, For God has given it into your hands, a place where there is no lack of anything that is on the earth. And 600 men of the family of the Danites went from there, from Zorah and Eshtaol, armed with weapons of war. And they went up and encamped in Kiriath-Jearim in Judah. Therefore they call the place Mahaneh Dan to this day. And there it is, west of Kiriath-Jearim. And they passed to the mountains of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. And the five men who had gone to spy out the country of Laish answered and said to their brethren, Do you not know that there are in this house an ephod, household idols, a carved image, and a molded image? Now therefore consider what you should do. So they turned aside, and there came to the house of the young Levite man, to the house of Micah, and greeted him. The 600 men armed with weapons of war, who were of the children of Dan, stood by the entrance of the gate. Then the five men had gone to spy out the land, went up. Entering there, they took the carved image, the ephod, the household idols, and the molded image. The priest stood at the entrance of the gate with 600 men who were armed with weapons of war. And these went into Micah's house and took the carved image, the ephod, the household idols, and the molded image. And the priest said to them, What are you doing? And he said, Be quiet, put your hand over your mouth, and come with us. Be a father and the priest to us. Is it better for you to be a priest to the household of one man, or to be a priest to a tribe and a family in Israel? So the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod, the household idols, and the carved image, and took his place among the people. Then they turned and departed, and put the little ones, the livestock, and the goods in front of them. And when they were a good way from the house of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house gathered together and overtook the children of Dan. And they called out to the children of Dan. So they turned and said to Micah, What ails you, that you have gathered such a company? So he said, You have taken away my gods, which I made, and the priest, and you have gone away. Now what more do I have? How can you say, What ails you? The children of Dan said to him, Do not let your voice be heard among us, lest angry men fall upon you and lose your life, and the lives of your household. Then the children of Dan went their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he returned and went back to his house. So they took the things Micah had made, the priest who had belonged to him, and went to Laish, to a people quiet and secure, and they struck them with the edge of the sword and burned the city with fire. There was no deliverer because it was far from Sidon, and they had no ties with anyone. It was in the valley that belongs to Beth-Rahob. So they built the city and dwelt there. And they called the name of that city Dan, after the name of Dan, their father, who was born into Israel. However, the name of the city formerly was Laish. Then the children of Dan set up for themselves the carved image. Then Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, and his sons were priests of the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land. So they set up for themselves Micah's carved image, which he made, and all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh. And just in reflecting back over this passage, this is an amazing two chapters. And I hope that we shall see it is very instructive regarding, again, as I've said, numerous attitudes that we find rampant among professing believers here in the 21st century. Let's go back, and I'd like to go through and just make a few comments and explain exactly what's going on. Chapter 17. In verses 1 to 6, we have here the author of the book of Judges is giving us the background to what is going to take place in these books. We have here the characters that are first introduced in verses 1 and 2. We have Micah and his mother. They're really a remarkable couple, aren't they? I mean, you have here Micah, who basically is a thief. He took this 1,100 shekels of silver, and in that day, that was a lot of money. He took several thousand dollars worth of goods from his mother, and then she, puts a curse in verse 2 here. He comes and says, Well, I took it. And then what does she do? May you be blessed by the Lord, my son. It's just rather interesting. So we have the characters here, and we will follow with Micah. We have here the stolen silver, then the vow. And we have here in verse 3, look at this woman. She makes a vow. So when he had returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, I have wholly dedicated the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son to make a carved image and a molded image. she makes a vow, and there's nothing wrong with making a vow necessarily, but she makes a vow that we're going to make idols. And I swear, as God is my witness, I'm going to make idols for God out of this stolen money. Really amazing. And it's done, and we need to note, it is done in the name of the Lord. She dedicates it to the Lord. Verse 5, we have here, learning a little bit more about Micah. The man Micah had a shrine. He basically had a room that was set off into his house where he had all these different little idols that were set up. Now he has two more to put in there. And so we see here that he was a religious man, had his own little shrine in his house, but yet he was an idolatrous man. And I think it's very interesting that we have here in verse 6, we have an editorial comment by the author of the book of Judges. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And that is basically the theme. If you take this and in chapter 17 and 18, that's what you find. And you find also that same verse being quoted again and again, chapters 19, 20, and 21. There was no king in Israel, and everyone did the right that was in his eyes. That is what he would do. So whatever he thought that it was to do, that's what they were doing. Now, the second half of the characters we have in verses 7 to 13, we have this Levite. And I called him here, and looking at this, that he basically is an out-of-work Levite. Back then, if we go back into the book of Joshua, and we find out there were certain what was called Levitical cities. There were cities that were given to the Levites that they would be able to perform the service for the people of God in these cities. But yet we have here this Levite. There was a young man from Bethlehem in Judah, a man of the family of Judah. He was a Levite and he was staying there. And he departed from that city to stay wherever he could find a place. Sounds like he's living in the 21st century. Can't find a job. He doesn't know what he's doing. And he's just wandering around. So this is what, you know, I've called him, he's an out-of-work Levite. The children of Israel were to be providing for the Levites. Now either one of two things is happening here. The Levite is either being disobedient to his Levitical calling, or you have, this is a symptom of what was happening in Israel, where the people stopped taking care of the Levites, and he had to go out and do something. But in either case here, we see that he was out of work. In verses 9 to 12, he comes to Micah. Micah finds him, says, and then he finds out that he's a Levite. Oh, good. Come and be a priest to me. Verse 10. Be a father and a priest to me, and I will give you 10 shekels of silver, a suit of clothes, and your sustenance. So he's all excited. So here we have then this out-of-work Levite now has a place to stay. He's got a job. But we find here that, look in verse 13. Now I know that the Lord will be good to me since I have a Levite as priest. You look at that and you say, well, Micah, he's thankful to God. He's thankful for his idolatrous priest. It's just amazing. Of what these, you know, he's giving thanks to God. He's praising God for idolatry. Now I know that the Lord will be good to me since I have a Levite as priest. So chapter 17 then sets the stage. And then the third part of this, if it was like a play, now you have the introduction of the tribe of Dan. We find here in verse 1 that they're looking for new ground. The inheritance, it says, had not fallen unto them among the tribes of Israel. They did have their ground, but if you would go and we could take the time and look in Joshua 19, the majority of their ground fell upon the Philistines. And apparently the Danites were unable to remove the Philistines from that land. So when it says that it had not fallen unto them, I think that it means that they did not get and possess their land. They could not be there. And we find that they basically were all crammed in this small area, these little cities, Zorah and Eshtaol. So then they send, it's just like, we need some more space. We need to have someplace to go. So what they do is they send these men out. They send these five men out. And we find here in verse 3, they recognize the voice of the Levite. And I think this is amazing too. This Levite, he got around. You know, not only was he in Bethlehem, which was not a Levitical city. He also somehow was near where the tribe of Dan was, also, these other two cities were not Levitic cities. So he was going all over the place looking for work or trying to find a place. But in any case, they recognized his voice. And then he tells them in verse 4 about what Micah had done. And it's interesting about the idols. We find that later on. They knew that there was these household idols here. And so they go to this idolatrous priest and say, please, verse 5, inquire of God that we may know whether the journey on which will be prosperous. They're seeking God through idols, through this priest, giving credibility to this man in his job. And so that a Levite says, go in peace, you'll have success. We find here in verses 7 to 13, we have the report. They go there, they find that the city is quiet and secure. It's all by itself. Well, we can get this, is basically what they were thinking. And so that's the report then they give in verses 9 and 10. And again, we find here, when you go, you will come to a secure people in a large land. For God has given it into your hands, a place where there is no lack of anything that is on the earth. Again, we find here that they're invoking the name of God, all the while ignoring the fact that God has already given them a promised land. God has already given them their lot in Israel. God gave you this over here, but we're going up here. And see, God's blessed us. We can go up here. But yet they attribute it again to God. Verses 14 to 20, we have now the interaction of these different parties. We have here that the men go out, the 600 men of war. And I think that also what we have is that their wives and their kids are there and everything else. So there's a huge company, possibly 2,000 people going out. They come here then in verses 14, 21. They come to the house of Micah on their journey. And they say, and I think it's interesting, in verse 14, the five men who went to spy out the country answered and said to their brethren, do you know that there are in these houses an ephod, a household idols, carved image and a molded image? Now therefore, consider what you should do. For Israelites, what they should have done was destroy those idols. But that's not what we have here. We find the seizing of the idols. They go in and they take them. We also, not only do they take the idols, they actually take the priest. And I think it's interesting, verse 18, when they went into Micah's house and took the carved images and the ephod, the household idols, in the molded image, the priest said to them, what are you doing? So this priest understood that they're taking my livelihood. I'm not going to have anything to serve anymore. Micah's going to be upset. Then they said to him, be quiet. Put your hand over your mouth and come with us. Be a father and a priest to us. Is it better for you to be a priest of the household of one man or that you be a priest of the tribe and the family of Israel? I think verse 20 is very instructive. Look at his reaction. So the priest's heart was glad. And he took the ephod, the household idols, and the carved image, and took place among the people. I think it's also interesting, verse 19, they wanted to have somebody to be a father and a priest to us, and yet they're ordering him what to do. Put your hand over your mouth. Don't say anything. You listen to us. And then they say, come, be our father. And just the incongruity is just amazing. But they were, everybody was happy. They had their little idols, and they're going on. Verse 22 and following, we find that Micah finds out about this. He gets his neighbors to go out after them, and of course he's not going to be able to stop 600 men of war. And he realizes that. And I think also, what does this tell you about Micah in verse 24? You have taken away my gods which I made and my priests, and you have gone away. Now what more do I have? Was not God the portion of Israel? But yet he says, when they took his idols away, what more do I have? Again, just very telling, a very telling indictment of that day and age. And then we have in verse 27 and following, the Danites are successful. They go up to Laish. They conquer the city. They establish their own city and name it after Dan. And then there's this little postscript, as it were, verse 30 and 31. Then the children of Dan set up for themselves a carved image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, and his sons were priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land. So we find here that there was this little dynasty set up. And we find this dynasty, this Jonathan, of which we know very little, that he had a dynasty that rivaled the kings of Israel. It outlasted any of the dynasties of the northern kingdom and even endured under the reigns of David and Solomon. That you had this false idolatrous priest up there in the city of Dan. And in fact, I didn't even put it in my notes, but it's just like, Jeroboam the son of Nebat, whenever he broke away and took the 10 tribes with him, what did he do? He wanted to set up places of worship. He set up two places of worship to draw the Judites, the people from Judah, away from the true religion and following what he set up. Where did he set them up? He set one in Bethel, which is right across the line, so we could get these people to come over to us. Where did he put the other one? He put the other idol that he set up in the city of Dan. There was already idolatry in that city. And what a perfect place. It was farther away than any other place in Israel. And if we're going to get the people to serve, they're not going to go to Jerusalem. They'll go up this way. And so this is what we have, all because of what took place in this chapter right here. One other thing I need to just make a comment on. If you have a study Bible or a Bible that has footnotes in it, you will notice in verse 30, it says, Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh. There's a very good likelihood that that's not the proper name that's there. It maybe should read Moses. In the Hebrew, there's just one letter difference. And that would make a little bit more sense about why and how significant it was that this Levite was doing what he was doing. Because he was basically the grandson of Moses, the leader of Israel. Of course, Micah would be happy. I could have somebody and have a link back to Moses. Again, we don't know that for sure. There's a textual problem here. But in any event, we find that this Jonathan had quite a legacy. It says that his sons were priests of the tribe of Dan until the day of captivity of the land. So that's then our passage. And I know in going through and you just think, well, you know, what exactly, how does that apply to today? But I think that there are many of the same attitudes here, and in the remainder of our time, I think I have 11 points here. But I think one thing that we can learn, and it is perfectly illustrated from these two chapters, in the first place, is not all who use the name of the Lord know the Lord. Now I know that this assembly holds to that view. And that's one reason that I'm here, is because, you know, I agree with that, you know, that sentiment. Not everybody who claims to be a Christian is a Christian. Not everybody who professes to know God knows God. But can you find a better place in the Scriptures to show and to illustrate of those who claim to know God and all these things they were doing and saying, I'm doing this because of God. God has blessed me because of this and invoking His name time and time again. And we see here that none of these people knew God. They didn't know anything of His Word. Back in chapter 17, verses 1 to 3, the mother, she claimed to know God. And how did she show that she knew God? I'm going to make idols to Him. Micah, in verse 13, what's he say? Now I know that the Lord will be good to me, since I have a Levite as priest. And basically, that's over his own little shrine, over his house of gods. So he's thanking God, invoking God's name and thanking God because he has an idolatrous priest. We have the Levite himself in verse 6 of chapter 18. He invokes the name of God. Go in peace. He's basically giving the blessing as Moses gave the blessing to the people. The presence of the Lord will be with you on your way. He's giving them a blessing. He's acting from a position of spiritual authority over these people. And he's doing it again in the name of the Lord. And we have the Danites in verse 5. They want to inquire of God. Tell us, is God going to bless our trip? And then in verse 10 of chapter 18, for God has given it into your hands. And so I observe in the first place that not all who use the name of the Lord know the Lord. And that is amply illustrated from these verses. In the second place, we can observe from these two chapters, the Lord is not at all pleased with all that is done in His name. I mean, a lot of people think that, well, I prayed and I did it for God, and it's just like, well, God's supposed to bless that. Whatever's done in God's name is to be blessed. I mean, did God really bless the making of these idols in His name? God is not at all pleased with all that is done in His name. Look at what was done. Idol worship was done in the name of God. A false priesthood was set up and a false worship was instituted. There was the forsaking of God's provision by the tribe of Dan. God had given them ground to possess. They forsook that, and not only did they forsake that, in the name of God, they go up to this other city and basically murder the inhabitants. It was not the same thing as Joshua going into the land. The Lord told them to get rid of these people. There was no command to do anything for the city of Laish. They went in, and basically verse 10 shows us that murder was done in the name of God. Doesn't that sound like today? In a lot of the things that we see. Do we know of any church that has idol worship? And they are thankful that they have idols today. Has false worship and a false priesthood? Forsaking God's provision. Again, these chapters illustrate for us that the Lord is not at all pleased with all that is done in His name. In the third place, we can see from chapter 17, verse 3, the godless seldom live up to their vows. What do we learn from the mother of Micah? What does she say in verse 3? I have wholly dedicated the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son, to make a carved image and a molded image. Now therefore I will return to you. She's sinning in making idols. But she didn't even live up to what she said she was going to do. It turns out in verse 4, they took 200 shekels. There were 1,100. So basically, she took over 80% of it and kept it for herself. She could not even live up to what she said. I'm reminded of the words of Christ, you know, let your yes be yes and your no be no. I mean, not only did she have the sin now of making an idol, she had a sin of breaking a vow to the Lord. In the third place, then, we observe that the godless seldom live up to their vows. And again, we find that today, that so much is said that, oh, I will do this, I will do that for God, and everything else. And people don't even live up to what they say that they will do. The godless seldom live up to their vows. In the fourth place, I'd like to make a little bit of a comparison between this Levite and the modern-day evangelical pastor. Note the parallels. What do we know about this guy? Let's go down through. In verse 18 or verse 8 of chapter 17, he's a wanderer, going from city to the city of Bethlehem to stay wherever he could find a place. He's a wanderer. He has a godly background. He comes, and we find here that, you know, he may even be descended from Moses. You know, he's a Levite and has this background. He's young. He lives off others. He has a well-known reputation. The Danites knew about him. We don't know how the Danites knew about him, but they knew of him. So he had a well-known reputation, worships his own way. He was seen by others as a servant of God. The Danites came asking him, it's just like, tell us what God says about this. And he assumes that he is a servant of God. But doesn't that sound exactly like much of what we know today of the evangelical church? Many pastors, I attended seminary back almost 20 years ago. And back in the late 80s, the statistic was the average time that a pastor stayed in, this was of everything across the board, but the average time that a pastor stayed in a pulpit was 18 months. That's just incredible. I don't know what it is now. It was 20 years ago. You know, I mean, it's just like they're a wanderer. You know, often, you know, people, they think they have a godly background. They get the spiritual training. They go to seminary. They do whatever spiritual things that they are. We think it's interesting also that he was young. How many pastors today are young? You know, and there's nothing wrong. I mean, you know, Timothy shows us that, you know, you can have a godly man be a young man. But I think to a certain degree, that's an exception. I mean, it's just like, you know, we're not supposed to be raising these people up very quickly. You know, Paul admonishes Timothy that we do not quickly, as he said, lay our hands on somebody, you know, and get them into the ministry. But yet, what is done today? It's just like, you know, you get them through high school, and you know, some churches are even having these kids that have made a profession. They'll get them up there in the pulpit, and they want them preaching before they're even in college, before they even know anything. You know, very similar to what we find here of this young man. had a well-known reputation, seen by others as a servant of God. But I think we can find here that some of these same attitudes that are in this Levite are present in the modern evangelical church today. We also find that there is no sense of loyalty. What did this Levite do? We find here in verse 12 of chapter 17, so Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest and lived in his house. I'm sorry, it was verse 11. And the young man became like one of his sons to him. Micah loved this individual. He cared for him. He provided for him. How did he repay him? You flip over to chapter 18, verse 20. When Dan, the tribe of Dan, said, "Come with us, be a father and a priest to us." What did he do? "I can't do that. I am loyal here. This is my place of ministry. This is where I need to be." And the priest's heart was glad. And he took the ephod, the household idols, and the carved image, and took his place among the people. "I'm going. I'm in a small church. This other church calls me. I can go. I can minister to more people." The rationalizations begin. There's something to be said for loyalty. And we find that, you know, again, that's the way the church is today. How do you know you're successful? You go on to bigger and bigger churches. And we find the same thing here in Judges 18. And we find, lastly, that they do leave a legacy. We find here that what this fellow did, you know, in they had a legacy of priests until the time of the exile. Several hundred years later go by, same family doing the same thing. And we'll comment more on that in a moment. So we see here some of the parallels between the modern evangelical church and this Levite. Also, the evangelical church today, in the fifth place, is much like the Danites in the men they want to rule over them. Let's look at the tribe of Dan. What did the tribe of Dan want in a pastor? What did they want in a father and a priest? They wanted somebody who could be controlled. Look at verse 19 again. I mentioned it before. "Be quiet, put your hand over your mouth, and come with us." They wanted somebody that they could control. And unfortunately, this is the way that many churches are today. They don't want a pastor who's going to stand up and preach the word, because that's going to get on somebody's nerves. That's going to step on somebody's toes sooner or later, because we all have sin and it's all going to be offensive. But what we find here is that these men wanted somebody who could be bought and controlled. And that is what we find today all around us. I think they also wanted somebody who would speak peace and give them a blessing for whatever they do. Look back at verse 5 and 6 of chapter 18. "Please inquire of God that we may know whether the journey will be prosperous. Go in peace." They wanted somebody who was going to say, there's going to be peace. Things are going to get better. That was the same thing that Jeremiah dealt with later. The one prophet, Hananiah, I think it is, came up against him. And he was preaching peace. You know, the church, even today, wants a man of peace. They don't want somebody that's going to come in and tell the truth. They don't want somebody that's going to rile things up. They don't want somebody that's going to make them feel uncomfortable. Why would I want to go to church and feel uncomfortable? But again, we find this is what the tribe of Dan wanted as well. And attitudes have stayed the same for 3,000 years. The evangelical church is much like the Danites and the men they want to rule over them. And I was reminded also of the words of Paul out of 2 Timothy. "I charge you therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who is to judge the quick and the dead at His appearing in His kingdom. Preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. But after their own lust, they shall heap to themselves teachers having itching ears." This is what they had back then. Paul, where did Paul, you know, I mean, yes, he was inspired by the Holy Spirit. But it's very likely that he read passages of this. You can see this all through the Old Testament. They want men of peace. They do not want the truth. And unfortunately, the evangelical church is very similar to that today. In this place, and moving on then, what else can we learn from this chapter? Behold how rare is loyalty. We don't find loyalty in this chapter. Again, we've already commented on it. I won't belabor the point. But what did that priest do? Again, everything that Micah had done for him, everything that Micah had provided for him, and he was like one of the family. How did he repay him? I'm going to Laish with the Danites.